Spoilers.
The Discussing Network presents Discussing Who, a Doctor Who podcast. I'm Kyle Jones, and I want to start this episode by welcoming back Lee Shackelford. Mr. Shackelford, how are you?
I'm okay. My wife and I are moving house. That's, you know, everybody who's done it and who hasn't knows that it's stressful. But we're moving to a great place. I've shared photos with Kyle and Clarence, and so they know this house is bigger on the inside. That's exciting.
And it looks literally from the front of the outside.
Yeah. Yeah. From the street. It really looks like a small house, and it ain't. Anyway, we're looking forward to having more space to mess around with. But that's me. Yeah. Otherwise, just trying to stay out of the heat. How about y'all?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. I think Clarence and I need to rent a time zone for a portion of your house. That might be cool.
It's
quite that big. But speaking of someone who is in the same time zone as me, Clarence Brown, how are you?
I'm just happy to see Time Lord technology is a real thing. So
yeah.
Congratulations, Lee. But I'm doing good. As always, glad to be back on with you guys and can't wait to talk about what we're talking about. What are we talking about tonight?
We are talking about season 2024 of Doctor Who. I'm not calling it series 14 or season one. I'm going to stick with my 2022, 2023,
season one,
2024 series of Doctor Who.
Which has caused me all types of problems as I've went and tried to find the episode list and I type in season one and, you know, it just kind of takes me.
Type in 2024. Yeah. I promise you it will work. And then it's not going to, but you get my point. Lee Shackelford.
You've said that.
Quick question. Hmm. You have something you like telling people. What is that?
I do. We know that you got lots of other things you could be doing, but you have chosen to spend this little time with us, and we are deeply grateful.
Indeed. And Clarence Brown, there's something you always like to share, and what might that be?
Mine is a call to action, and I like to tell everyone they can support this show by subscribing, leaving a review, or telling a friend, or even joining us on a stream. If you have a review idea or anything else you would like us to know, please send that in along with anything else to discussingwho@gmail.com or hit us up at discussingwho on any and all social media.
Good deal.
Love suggestions.
Oh, yeah.
Indeed, indeed. And before we get started, I want to give a quick shout out to Tasha from After the Snap Movies and TV in the chat and also Wynne Grace from the Wynne Grace Project. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Glad to have you both here. So, gentlemen, I want to get started because I have been thinking about this episode for several weeks, so I don't want to delay anymore. So that means I get to say, if you have not seen the 2024 series of Doctor Who, season 1, 2024, Doctor Who, or series 14, 2024 of Doctor Who, put us on pause, go out, watch the episodes, come back, because from this moment forward, spoilers.
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 Alrighty, my spoiler warning has gone out, and we are back to discuss the 2024 series of Doctor Who, which first aired / streamed between May and June of 2024. It starred Shuti Gatwa as the 15th Doctor and Millie Gibson as Ruby Sunday. So summary view, just a broad overview. What did you think of this season? Lee Shackelford, I'll start with you. What did you think?
It's such a mixed bag, isn't it? It's there's some things that I just thought were so weak and so kind of problematic that I just thought, wow, I can see what some of the critics are having a hard time with. But man, when it was good, it was good. When it was solid, it was solid. And one thing that I feel like everybody can agree on is that Shuti rocks. I could be wrong. But I'm sure, haters going to hate, right? But yeah, it's just hard to have a problem with Shuti. What about you, Mr. Brown?
I think I rather enjoyed this season. I feel like it was a strong season overall. I feel like it did get things. If you had issues with things maybe being off track a little bit with Chibnall, certainly things are back on track from my perspective. So, I mean, overall, I think it was a pretty good season. I will echo what you said, Lee Shooty rocks. Let's put that on a T-shirt. And yeah, man, I think things are going in the right direction. And I'm sure we're going to get into more of the nuts and bolts of it. So, yeah.
This was a season that I'm already starting to watch again. And I have episode picks that I am watching already again and again. There's only one episode, to be brutally honest, that I have only watched a couple of times when we reviewed it. But for the rest of them, even though I may not have liked, per se, the ending, I still think the fun energy that we had in that, there's so many good moments in that. Yeah. So for me, I'm glad to have RTD back. Shooty rocks. I have already, I'll just say it right now, he is already in my top five after one season. And, you know, he's honestly, if I were to just come out and say it, number one, Tom Baker, number two and three would be 10 and 14. And he's number four in my top five.
Yeah, how about that?
I just, for some reason, just really connected with this doctor, and he is just spot on. So yes, really, really enjoyed him. So I want to ask you, Clarence, favorite episode out of this season and why?
Oh, wow. Man, you put me on the spot here.
Knee-jerk reaction. What do you think?
I don't know why, but I want to say 73 yards. Even though it was maybe the lightest of the episodes as far as a doctor, I think, you know, being a fan of Black Mirror, being a fan of The Outer Limits and Twilight Zone, of course, this episode just felt like it was cut directly from that cloth. And more than any other, I think this one, like, sat with me the most as we were watching the season. Like, I couldn't get it out of my head until we sat down and talked about it. You know, it was that type of episode. So I think 73 yards, but that certainly does not say that a lot of the rest of them aren't really, 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 really close. I think they're almost interchangeable for a few of them for me.
Mm. All right, Lee, what say you?
Boom.
Boom.
Again, maybe there's some problematic things in it. One character in particular that none of us liked, but I just how gratifying that was after the first kind of far out, silly episodes, and then we got this. This could happen today. This could happen to you, kind of thing. This, you know,
yeah.
And I always love the. Well, it's Stephen Moffat's thing, but about the church and the soldiers and everything. I just always loved that. It was all used to good effect, including the twist at the end.
Mm.
Yeah, there you go.
So you guys are going to make me feel really shallow in my favorites, but I'm judging my favorites because I actually kind of have two. Because,
well, I do too.
And Clarence, you can go back and give you if you have one that kind of ties. What was your other tie?
Lee? Just as after the snap weighed in with this title, I was about to say it. Dot and Bubble is a close second for me. I just found that what it had to say was so profound and really a very engaging chase too. Just a thrilling hour of TV. So that's my close runner-up. So,
all right, Clarence, do you have another one that's just right up there for you?
Yeah, I think Lee said it. Mine would be Boom, and just the, I think the acting in that episode was just off the charts, and the situation of how he had to portray that character as being stuck in that one spot the entirety of the episode, just about, and it all was his acting and nothing else, really. Just a great job for Shooty in that episode, and you know, some great mystery as well, and the religious aspects, as Lee pointed out, that keep coming around. So I really enjoyed that one.
For the fun aspect, so I'm gonna take mine in two different ways. For the fun aspect, and to quote something Clarence said just a minute ago, can't get it out of my head, I'm going to go with Rogue. I have found myself watching that just for the fun of it. Mm-hmm. And I also like The Devil's Chord.
I knew you were going to say that.
You knew that because I love a campy villain. And yeah. How much more campy villain can you get than the Maestro?
Up to Cesar Romero's Joker, I don't think you can get any.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's farcical. It's campy. It's out there. It's in your face. And yeah. I would love an episode where Missy and the Maestro teamed up, because my God, that would be fun.
Well, one of them would eat the other alive.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure which, but yeah.
But if I were to go serious, I would have to say what you guys said, Boom. Hmm. Obvious, everything you said, and Dot and Bubble, because it engaged people either way, whether you got it, you didn't get it, you saw it, you didn't see it. You know, there were so many ways to interpret it. And for me, the whole thing of it being like a slap in the face, literally, and almost figuratively, and his response and his acting, awesome. And Millie Gibson's acting too in that scene that we talked about. Awesome. So two quick comments. Tasha from After the Snaps gives Dot and Bubble as hers, and Wind Grace gives 73 Yards as the top. So it looks like we're in consensus.
And also
here.
Rogue, yeah. But does it mean that we've been rejoicing about the return of Russell T. Davies, and that what we love most was the script written by Stephen Moffat?
But do they just pair well together?
Well, yeah. Yeah. Wine and cheese, man. Mm. And I'm now forgotten the team from Loki who wrote the other one, but yeah.
Kate Herndon, was that
yes.
right?
Yeah.
Why did I remember that? I do not know. Maybe because I've watched it over and over.
Yeah. The opening titles are not lost on you.
All right. Claire, Lee, I'm going to put this one to you first. What surprised you the most?
That's a good question. What surprised me the most? I think the tone of those first two episodes, they were so broad and so cartoony. I mean, space babies. And then whoosh, boom. I think as that episode was going on, I just kept thinking, what's going on here? You know, it was just a surprise. It just seemed like we suddenly, somebody grabbed the steering wheel and turned it 90 degrees. I'm like, whoa.
I think as we watched the episodes, the whole Susan Twist thing was kind of surprising. And I'm sure we're going to talk about it a little more at the end, but I don't really know. It was surprising, and I don't think it was as fulfilling as I thought it would be. It certainly was surprising and interesting as we were going along, no doubt. And there's something about having that mystery that the collective consciousness of Whovians are trying to figure out what's going on. That was a surprise and fun, but I don't know. Maybe we'll dissect a little bit more later.
So I have a question at the end of this, no pun intended, of not a twist, but a question. Lee, the other day I messaged you one-on-one and we were chatting back and forth, and I made the comment of, I have a question that I'm going to ask tonight that I think that you might give a response to. And that's going to be my question at the end, which will tie in, Clarence, to what you just said. But for me, I think what surprised me the most was honestly how well they handled, in my opinion, the racism of the way they confronted it. I wasn't expecting that. And I know, you know, it was subtle. Some people didn't get it more so than others. I think that just kind of surprised me that they did it in a way to where it literally, for me watching, me personally watching, came out of left field. And then when you watched it back a second time or a third time, it was like you've seen people that you know, and we all come from the South, and we know people who talk with subtleties and, you know, little hints and whatnot.
Bless your heart.
Yes, and it's just so out there watching it back. So for me, that was what surprised me the most, and it was well done. Thoughts, anyone?
It is interesting, isn't it? I mean, it caught me off guard, too. And this is our first Black Doctor. You sort of want to say, well, what did you think was going to happen? But
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe we just didn't expect that it would we'd face it head on like that. I don't know.
Tasha says microaggressions.
Yeah, yeah. Because you're right. Once you pointed out to me, and a lot of them flew past me, they're in the episode from the beginning. It's all there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, Dot and Bubble is one of those episodes, excuse me, where I have to look at and wonder if it's bad or brilliant. and I think it's easy to look at it in both ways. It's just teetering on that, on both sides a little bit for me. I can appreciate what they're going for. I certainly like the message. But I can't somehow for me, I can't get past that feeling of that the episode was just bad as I watched it the first time. And honestly, going back with everything you guys have said, I can go back and watch it and be like, OK, I see it. Wow, this is kind of cool. But, you know, there's something about that first watch and that taste it put in my mouth that I can't quite get past. So, you know, maybe in time, like you mentioned wine before, Lee, maybe it'll go like a fine wine.
That's right.
But you know what? And let me say this before I forget it. And maybe instead of microaggressions, in the macro look of things, I have a feeling that there would be people who would be more comfortable saying some of those microaggressions to Lee and I than maybe to you, Clarence. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe that's why I picked up on some of these things, because I've heard people who just assume by looking at me, seeing that I'm white, that, you know, white is right, and I'm going to agree with you, that would be more likely to say some of these little things that they said, where, you know, they would be quite blatant to say that these little microaggressions to you, to your face.
Yeah. Maybe. But they wouldn't. They wouldn't say.
And they wouldn't.
Yeah. Yeah, in the chat, Wingrace is saying, I think it's because it played like a goofy episode and then it just hit a brick wall. And I think that's it. You don't expect the tone to come down like that so much. It's like, wow, this is kind of a silly idea. And then, whoa.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's a good observation.
And he says, you know, or at least I missed so much of it on first watch.
Yeah, but.
And I'm sitting here sounding like, oh, well, I'm so enlightened. I got the microaggressions in the second watch, but it slapped me in the face when she said, no, sir, not, you know, because of you. You know, that was like, holy bleep.
Yeah.
Whenever she did that, you know, and then I'm going back and I'm seeing it all, but I'm just thinking she's a snob, you know, stuck up bleep.
Right.
You know,
bleep.
You know,
but you know, I think we talked about this back in with the 13th Doctor, that I remember the climax moment in Rosa when they're all about to get on the bus. And I remember as an audience member just kind of face palming because I was a couple of steps ahead of the story. I thought when Graham gets on the bus, they're going to ask her to move. He's going to be the guy, you know. And I wonder, did I get that first because I'm a white guy with the collective guilt of the sins of my fathers on my shoulders? Or is it because I've written plays about Rose and about the arrest and everything? Or is it because I'm a screenwriter and I, you know,
or is it a little bit of both?
Or some melange of all those things. But yeah, I was way ahead of the script. I thought, what a cruel thing to do to Graham. Oh no.
One of the best moments of Doctor Who ever, man.
Wow. Wasn't that something? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So my next question, you know, we keep talking about Shudi and we've all said, you know, he's phenomenal, but not he as an actor. I want you to guys to describe the 15th Doctor. Who is the 15th Doctor? If you had to describe the 15th Doctor to someone.
Did Clarence? You say Doctor Who?
Doctor Who.
Doctor.
Describe the 15th Doctor.
Hmm. how would I describe the 15th Doctor? You know, in a lot of ways, he doesn't deviate a lot from the newer Doctors, from the new era of Doctor Who. He doesn't deviate a lot in that sense. I don't know. Maybe Lee, you go first. I'm trying to. This is one I should have came prepared for.
Well, nice. but you know, I purposely didn't share my questions because I wanted them to be off the cuff and make you think. So, Lee, describe the 15th
Doctor. How do you catch a cloud and pin it down? Well, the episode, well, starting from the Christmas specials last year, or the 60th anniversary specials, we've had this idea of somebody who is the god of mischief and the god of music and these sort of archetypes. And he is almost like an avatar of emotional passion. That everything he feels seems to be extremely strong. He loves with everything in his body, and he hates with everything in his body. And he wants to get into the dance floor and dance, and he wants to, you know, get into fights and fight. And he wants, you know, it's just everything is great guns. And I just find that really exciting that he is living this life that he's unexpectedly discovered he has, and he's living it to the fullest. Every minute that he can, he takes opportunities. You know, there's an opportunity for him to kiss this guy. Yeah, let's do it. Let's just do it. I just met him a few minutes ago. Let's just do it. You know, that's who 15 is to me.
So for me, for 15, you know, I'm going to go back to the moment. And if you guys will remember in the 60th anniversary and the giggle, this was whenever I'm discussing and describing he and the 14th Doctor's conversation there on the helipad. And I get emotional talking about how he's the healed doctor and that version of you that's saying that it's okay. And to me, that's who he is. The 15th Doctor is the one that said, I went through some stuff. I came through some stuff. It's been hell. But I've made it to the other side. Yeah. There's going to be pain. There's going to be heartache. But this is who I am. Deal with it. And that's kind of how I feel about him.
It's all the sweeter because he's been through hell.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I'm still standing.
Back to you.
I realized what I was grasping for a minute ago. In the first few episodes, we found him being very, very afraid. Especially when you think of space babies, it felt like the first time that I've seen the Doctor, at least, have true fear in that way in this season. I do think Shuti's Doctor is he wears his emotion on his sleeves in a lot of ways. And I agree with Lee in the sense that he's not afraid to sing. He's not afraid to dance. Maybe that sets him apart a little bit from other Doctors. Hmm. And you can equate that to having fun. In a way, but yeah.
Now, I like that. I really like that.
Yeah, it is. It's sort of like, wow, I got to show you this. Yeah.
So Tasha says, and I really like this, everything you love about the Doctor, but with a little more swag. I like that. And Wingrace says, he stopped running away for a bit and started running towards up until the Susan comment at the end. So. I like that. All right. So we've described the 15th Doctor. Clarence, I'm going to go back to you for this one. What theme or storyline would you like to see carry over into 2025?
You know, one thing I was really kind of disappointed about, and even though I didn't love the episode at the time, I thought we were definitely going to go deep into the idea of the toy maker's children. And, you know, the Devil's Cord. I thought that was an excellent setup for something that would permeate through the rest of the season. But unfortunately, we didn't get much more of the character in the Devil's, the Maestro or the Maestro's child for the rest of the season, unless I'm forgetting something there.
You're not.
But yeah, so I thought that was the setup for the rest of the season. So I at least think that's going to be something that they revisit. And maybe it can make me love this episode a little bit more. I didn't think it was a bad episode. It wasn't a boom. It wasn't my favorite to start off the season. But yeah, that could definitely be something we come back to that they can flush out a little bit more. And and maybe see some of the.
Okay. Lee, what about you?
Things I want to see carried over until next year. Susan.
And not Twist.
Right. They teased us with the doctor's granddaughter all year long.
How dare they?
Still want us to get back to Susan. And, you know, maybe that's just that would just be fan service. And on the one hand, what's wrong with that? And
guess what? Susan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That if I had to give my one, and I'm trying so hard to not say my one negative thing, but my one disappointment that I would have had is I felt like in that finale, I know this was Ruby's story, but mm-hmm. I needed Susan. I wanted it to me emotionally. That would have been the icing on the cake for the finale. Is if after he reunited her with her mom, then he goes and reunites himself with his granddaughter.
So much about family. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Now, there's more that I'll say toward the end of this, but that would be what I would like to see carry over.
Another of my Whovian friends said, we got Mel Bush, but we can't have Susan.
And I have to once again give it to Bonnie Langford.
Yeah.
I mean, kudos to her.
I've never enjoyed Mel so much. Yeah.
And Wynne Grace also says, fan service, yes, but it would also absolutely be good for the character of the Doctor. Totally agree.
Yeah. Bingo.
All right, so next, and this is our last one for the story part of our discussion. Which episode did you enjoy the least? And how would you, if you were the writer and or director, make it better? And I'll start with this. The one that I enjoyed the least, the one that I've not gone back since we reviewed it, was Space Babies. What would I have changed to make it better?
Space babies.
I'm okay with the space babies because some of them were adorable, but the booger monster and the farting combustion and whatnot, that I could have done without that. You know, I could have had the babies actually, you know, you could have had a better, less farcical, less whatever ending. To me, that was the only one that I just, even whenever I went back and watched it, the whole thing about the monster and whatnot, I didn't even really watch that. I just fast forwarded to the end because I don't really care for grossy stuff. So that just wasn't me.
It hit me only this week that Space Babies would have been a great script for Red Dwarf.
Yes, agreed.
But maybe not. For Doctor Who.
Or even Oz 9. And it would have fit perfectly.
Well, it would have been a great Red Dwarf, but yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, my goodness, Oz 9 and aromatherapy canisters, but still, you know, not Doctor Who.
Not Doctor Who.
All right, Lee, what would be the episode that you like the least and how would you make it better?
I might go into the two-parter if I was the showrunner, the writer. And somebody put that script on my desk, I would say, love the idea of bringing back Sutek. Do we need the idea that he's been with the Doctor since 1974? And the way we're going to deal with him is by dragging him, tying a rope around him and dragging him.
Bad dog.
And somehow this is related to everything that's happened before, that we have this rift in the universe and everybody's saying the bad guy's coming. Well, he's obviously coming from this other universe. No, it's Sutek. I mean, they did relate all those ideas, but he isn't part of the hierarchy of the toy maker and maestro. I just thought all of that could be tied up a lot more elegantly. I'm still pondering the idea that the big secret is that Ruby's mom is nobody in particular. I mean, not that we don't know who she is, but you know what I mean. Right. She's not going to turn out to be a time lady, and she's not, you know, Susan Twist. She's not, you know.
She has to point at the sign. Don't forget,
right? And why she's doing that? It just it is. It's just not satisfying. It's just not. It doesn't tie everything up in a way that I found dramatically effective. Mm. So, but I kind of love that idea, and I kind of don't, and I just kind of don't know what to think about it. And I feel that I should. I feel like, you know, the episode should, I should know how I feel about it. Yeah, after the snap is saying, it's just like Rey, referring to the third Star Wars trilogy. Yeah, it's like, really? Didn't we just do this? Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Right. So whatever.
Well, I have a question at the end, so I'm going to hold my question. Clarence, what say ye?
To launch the season with. Yeah. And I think they could have, you know, if I would give suggestions on how to make that episode better, I think they definitely could have, if it was just Space Kids, maybe. If they'd been a little bit older, maybe it would have played a little bit better than these kids going around on hover rounds and the mouth movement was Uncanny Valley. Mm. It was just a weird freaking episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a lot of ideas we had already seen in Sleep No More, I feel. So it just not a great episode to kick off this new season one. Mm.
So now I want to get into what I'm calling the portion of our discussion where we're not talking about the story per se, the beats of the stories, but just from a broader sense. So Clarence, going to bring this one back to you. Who was the target audience, in your opinion, for this season?
I agree with Leo on some points. You got to scratch your head. Like, they're bringing back Sutik, and it was just kind of weird. And I'm sure a lot of people, without having gone back and seen Pyramid of Mars and getting caught up, they may be like, what is going on here? So yeah, I think they kind of failed at the very end with that. So, but I definitely think it was geared toward, the new Whovian.
Okay. Lee, target audience. Who was the target audience?
Yeah. The goal from 1963 was family, right? Which was understood to mean youngish mom and dad and their little kids. And this is something that, you know, the four or five of us could sit down and watch together, and there'd be something for all of us. So it means that we've always skewed a little toward the kids. So 8, 9, maybe.
Yeah. Hmm. You know, I don't know if I went that young, but for me, I thought the target audience was the, like Clarence said, the new Whovians. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not saying that this was dismissing the, you know, fans that have been there for so long, but I think I just had this feeling that RTD went into it with the idea and the plan of this is exposing Doctor Who in a new way internationally, you know, more exposure probably than ever before, regardless of ratings and et cetera. And if I'm going to increase and expose a new audience, would it be better to expose someone our age, or would it be better to appeal to someone who is 15 to 20 to 25 that may be watching it for the next 15, 20, 25 years?
And that's what you want, right? We're trying
to build
a new base. Yeah. Yeah. I'm talking crap because the more I think about it, 73 yards, an 8-year-old would say, change the channel, right? I mean, and Rogue, I don't think they'll like the birds, but.
And the birds look cool.
Yeah. But it's got to be our young adults, which are the target for almost everything in mass media. So.
But you can't tell me, I mean, and I'm sure there's plenty of guys that are our age, but you can't tell me a guy from 15 to 25 wouldn't see Space Babies and see the grossness and be like, oh, yeah, man, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. I mean,
that's funny.
With some age comes the ability, I think, to look back and to appreciate something that is for a much younger audience.
True.
I hope that's true. Anyway, I mean, I've just turned my wife onto Thunderbirds, which I love just like nothing else on earth. And yeah, and she and I are having such fun watching Thunderbirds, which got started about the same time as Doctor Who and was for very much the same audience, except, you know, presented in a different way. But yeah, it really works on a lot of different levels. You can really appreciate it as an adult. But it was intended to be a show for children.
So just, speaking of younger people, I pulled a quote that RTD said when talking about this particular series and writing this series. He says, I was thinking about what a terrible world it is now and how many stresses of mental health there are in young people. And he, so I'm thinking this sense of fun and this adventure, he wove that in there to make it a little more fun. That we saw between this younger companion, this younger doctor, and this energy that he seemed to be putting. All right, so my next question is, why do you think there has been so much negativity around this season? Lee, I'll start with you.
Space babies.
All roads lead.
Well, just as Clarence said earlier, what an odd way to open the season. It's, if the season had started with boom, I don't think we would have heard that kind of noise. And I don't know. I think it's to somebody's credit that I have not heard, oh, now the doctor's black. You know, I have not heard that. Maybe because I don't look for it, but you know, I haven't seen that. I guess there are other things about the show that I've seen people saying, when did Doctor Who get so woke? Which, if you know the show from the beginning, that's hilarious. I don't know. I don't know. It's, you know, it's like I keep saying about Star Wars. Nobody hates Star Wars like Star Wars fans. I think maybe there's a section of Doctor Who fans who are going to hate Doctor Who no matter what. And it's because it isn't their Doctor Who, and they can't really define what that is. So they're constantly set up for disappointment. I don't know. What do you guys think?
All right, Clarence, what do you think?
It's a big, tough question, I think.
I think a lot of the animosity comes from the whole woke thing. And whatever that means to you, even I don't know what that even means anymore.
right.
But is the show progressive in some ways? Yes, I think it has been that since New Who has been around. And some people might have a problem with that. But I always go to the core of who the Doctor is and who the Doctor can be. If you put that at the fore, it really, nothing he does should surprise you or matter for that, you know, for that
right.
matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's an alien too. So take that into account.
So, you know, you guys know that I went in or down this rabbit hole of trying to be positive and interact as both discussing Who on social media and as me. And honestly, in retrospect, I wish that I would have never done that. I wish I would have stayed away from the Who groups and not tried to interact and comment and whatnot, because it really was almost it wasn't almost, it was freaking disheartening how many people, just if you tried to say something positive, would attack you for your positivity. And I mean, just this last week, somebody posted in a Doctor Who group, 5 reasons why this is the worst season of Doctor Who ever. And my comment was, just in general, wouldn't it be better as a fandom that if we posted things like the top 5 reasons that we could do, or the top 5 ways that we could make 2025 season better, you know, switch it. And somebody posted a comment directly to my comment saying, it must be nice living in a Pollyanna world.
Yeah, I'm afraid I saw that discussion, because I just thought, wow, what a great point he's brought up. Nobody's going to,
Yes,
they are.
And but you know what I love saying to these people? Either, you missed the point, but thank you so much for your comment. All the best to you. Yeah. Because to me, that just kind of cuts it in the bud.
Thanks for playing.
Thanks for playing. But seriously, though, I really think that there are people out there that revel in that type of negativity and have nothing better to do than try to pick a fight with someone. You know, they want to get that buzz from people. But the other thing that I think is, some of this, and I may be totally wrong, but I think some of this is disguised dislike, because they just can't come out and say, we don't like the fact that a black man is now the doctor. So to compensate from that, it's woke, or it's not this, or it's not that, or whatever the case may be, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, who knows? But that's just kind of the feeling that I get.
If it wasn't so widespread, I would think that that might be what's going on here. But I don't know.
Who knows? It's
who
just,
knows? I mean,
it's just I just have found that the best way sometimes is just to stay away from social media, focus on the positive. You know, I think one of you laughed at me whenever I said on YouTube, whenever I was seeing these horrible videos about how bad it was, and I just blocked the channels. Like, I'm selecting, I'm paying for YouTube Premium. I don't want to see you people. I'm not going to participate.
Bye. Yeah, right. No, and I was afraid you were just going to get your nose bloodied engaging with that kind of nonsense, but it's because it is pointless. I mean, the best psychology that's out there says that these are people who are enjoying a fleeting moment of power by crushing somebody else, by putting somebody else down. They get a little dopamine hit. It's like just a little bit of meanness. Ha! You know? And we have a whole political landscape now that's based on hate and fear, because it gives people a little bit of pleasure somewhere deep down to say, oh yeah, that thing you like, well, it stinks. Ha! Show you.
Yeah, and Wynn Grace's comment here saying that, and then you had the people who haven't watched the show in 10 years, but they watch the reviews and parrot the bad ideas that they were told.
Yeah, you don't have to watch the show at all. You just
oh man, it was this one guy, this one channel. It wasn't Doctor Who related, but I think it was Star Wars related, and he just always railed about Kathleen Kennedy, but he never watched any of the new stuff because he refused, because she's at the head of it. But still, he had an opinion every week about an episode that dropped. I'm like, you're not watching it. Why are you up here talking bad about it?
I don't have to watch it to know that it stinks.
Okay, so I have, before we move on from this one, I've got one more thing to equal up to what you just said, Clarence. Mm. There was a YouTube video that posted, you know, that I saw. The guy had like 20 subscribers, I think. You know, not saying that's a bad thing, I'm just saying, but he doesn't have that many subscribers. Someone in Hollywood, and Hollywood Insider, had leaked to him that Bad Wolf Studios had fired Russell T. Davies because of the disastrous ratings of Doctor Who. Yeah. Bad Wolf Studios is owned by Russell T. Davies.
Yeah. So that would be a little suicidal.
Yeah. So there you go.
And the ratings are extraordinary.
No, they're horrible.
Okay. I'm sorry. Yeah. I forgot. That was the mistake in hiring the American Shuri Gatwa to play.
Yes.
So, yeah. While we're spreading misinformation.
All right. So, you know, let's stay with the doctor. But another complaint that I saw, and I just want to get your feedback here. There was complaints about down to how he was dressed, meaning he doesn't have the same costume every week.
Right.
Thoughts?
Neither did Peter Capaldi.
Neither did David Tennant. Neither did Matt Smith.
Yeah.
Neither did Christopher Eccleston.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was kind of a joke that Eccleston was always the same. At one point, he says, I changed me jumper. And you couldn't even tell that he, but yeah, I mean, David had two suits. Right. And Matt had, some variation. Yeah. Sometimes it was very Edwardian, sometimes not. But Capaldi's was all over the place. And I think a lot of people were saying, finally, that makes some sense. Jodie's, say what you will. it was distinctive. But I think it would have been a lot more interesting if she had changed clothes a lot. Although I guess people would have had a smart remark about that, too. So, of course, she changes clothes all the time because she's a woman. But... because I do remember somebody early on saying, you realize that wardrobe that we saw in, was it in Runaway Bride? Christmas Invasion.
The Christmas Invasion, yes.
Yeah. You know, that's still down there. Now that the doctor's a woman, she's going to go nuts in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Clarence, did it bother you that he changed outfits?
No, I'm gonna go back to what Tasha said. He had swag. Yeah. He switched it up. He, you know, each week we're going different hair. Different. I can pick out my the hair I might not love, but you know. But I will say my favorites were the short time we saw him in 73 yards, what he was wearing there, and I thought what he was wearing in Boom is freaking cool. So you know, he had a little swag with it. I can't complain about that.
I often pick on John Nathan Turner with the question marks, but in a way, this is the same concept in the sense of look how many opportunities for cosplay this season opened up for people to do different type of cosplays that are easier to make than you know, having to spend so much money on very unique and very intricate costume designs. I mean, there's plenty to choose from in this season. All right, no doubt. One more thing on this Doctor before we get to my question that I keep hinting about. You know, I've seen complaints that there are complaints that this Doctor cries every week. Thoughts? Did the emotion or the showing of emotion bother you? Not bother you? Indifferent? What?
No, I think that's part of what makes him such an effective Doctor. As I said before, I love his head-on lunge into all the emotions that he's experiencing. And that means he's going to cry. He's going to scream, as he's done a number of times. You know, when he thought he's been personally responsible for wiping out all life on Earth, that howl into the darkness, that's just a chilling moment. You know, I would say he's the Doctor who screams more than the Doctor who cries. But he's also the Doctor who laughs and who sings and who dances. Just, I don't know.
Okay. Clarence, what do you think?
I think it's an essential aspect of the Doctor to make me believe in these emotional moments. And I think that's what Shudi does. You know, even in the moment that kind of hit me, that slapped me in the face that I didn't see coming in Dot and Bubble, you have to really appreciate what he's able to do in these very emotional, moments. And I think he's great at it. I don't have a problem with the tears dropping every once in a while, because that means they're acting, pal. They're acting.
It's called acting.
Oh, yeah. You know, I go back to something that we've done before, and the way I judged my ranking of the Doctors was how comfortable I would be with that incarnation. And maybe that's one of the reasons why he is so high on my list, is the ability to get pissed off, the ability to get angry. And there's a difference between being pissed off and being downright angry, and the ability to be fun and laugh and just have fun. And it's just out there all over his face, makes me comfortable. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, ultimately. You can relate.
I can relate, and I appreciate that. So, go ahead.
Yeah, well, one quick comment on that, and it's about range, too. You know, it made me think of Jodie Whittaker's Doctor, and we know Jodie Whittaker is an excellent actor, but I don't think we saw the same amount of range from her that we've seen in this season, this one season of Shudi, or any of the other Doctors. That might have been the one thing about her Doctor that I didn't, that really didn't jump out at me, but now that we're talking about it, she didn't really display a range of emotion like that. And maybe it was intentional because, you know, it was the first female Doctor. Maybe they didn't want to go there.
Yeah, but, you know, we've talked about this before, and I remember thinking or saying at the time, that's a dead waste of Jodie Whittaker. Because in other things that we've seen her, she's got the range. Why wouldn't we see that on Doctor Who? But yeah, so
I wonder how much this played into that. And what this is remember one of my discussions, not complaints, but my discussions about Chibnall was he specifically told her, do not go back and watch previous Doctors, make this your own. Whereas the reverse, not only was Shudi already a fan from watching David Tennant and Catherine Tate from, you know, as a fan watching, but he was also told, go back and watch these stories and these doctors and watch as much and learn as much as you can. So does that play into learning this character play into, because I think fans look for those little nods. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We look for them saying something, but saying it, there's a difference between saying reverse the polarity and saying reverse the polarity of the neutron flow, you know, or whatever.
And having fun with it because you know
what it means and how to say it and what mannerism to say it.
That's a good point. Is there two of our, what we would consider our best doctors were Doctor Who fans, the David Tennant and Peter Capaldi. I just saw a picture the other day of Peter Capaldi as an excited young man getting an autograph from Tom Baker. That's got to affect how you then come to the role yourself. That's
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So here's my question. So let's see if this reframes. It may not, but let's see if this reframes how we feel about this past season. So while not everyone was a fan of RTD era number one, for those of us who overall were, do we remember it so fondly as a complete story rather than each individual series? Basically, does the luxury of the complete story add to our enjoyment because we know everything and we see it as one complete season, not just season 2005, 6, 7, 8, and 9. Thoughts?
So what is the big overarching thing from this season, the Susan Twist thing? I think you can take Bad Wolf in that first season and on its own, it just stands as something remarkable and amazing. I mean, having Jack Harkness there. And just that story alone, I think it's such an amazing story. Even devoid of knowing what happens next, you could just look at that, those moments in that season, just like, oh, that's amazing. He tied it all together. So, comparing that to this current season, I think it doesn't quite, well, doesn't, in my opinion, match up to that in any sense, but yeah, I don't think this stuff after the 2005 season makes it that much better. It does add to it, of course, but I can just take that on its own and be like, oh, that's amazing. That's awesome.
Okay, good point. Lee, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point, and I'm glad, Clarence, I'm glad you reminded me about how much we all thrilled to Bad Wolf when we were experiencing that the first time. Because sometimes it would just come out as an Easter egg. You know, there's a helicopter at one point, and you can hear the pilot identifying himself as Black Wolf One and that, or Bad Wolf One. And that was the only thing in that episode. But, you know, we heard it. Like, what does that mean? What is that? Yeah. Where is that coming from? And this one was more heavy-handed, and so the payoff couldn't be proportionate to that. And I don't know. I think of each of these episodes so much as in terms of their standalone stories that I don't feel like I had a strong sense of continuity between them, other than being reminded from time to time that there's a continuity.
Okay.
That's my feeling.
All right. So I agree with both of you. I think both of them can, but you know, 2005, 2006, 7, and 8, they all stand alone and can stand on their own. And they together make a beautiful volume, you know, but as a chapter, they are their own chapter and their own stories. Totally agree with that. So I think what we're losing here is the number of episodes. Each of these episodes, and not including the Christmas specials, are 13 episode seasons plus a Christmas special.
Yep.
Now we're at 8 episodes plus a Christmas special. Mm-hmm. We had no two-parters in this. You know, everyone was a standalone story, no two-parters. So I think we didn't have the fleshing out of stories to where I think that's what we're missing. And it poses the question then, how do we make Doctor Who be a successful 8-episode story, but yet keep that mystique that fans have grown to know and expect? Thoughts?
I like Wingrace's comment in the chat here that it's in Boom. Ruby said that she'd been traveling with the Doctor for 6 months or whatever, but this is her first alien world. And so kind of in the audience, a lot of us are saying, what have they been doing in the meantime? I mean, there's obviously, you know, plenty of other things to do with the time machine, but maybe give us a little hint of what that was or something. So it's like we just didn't have time. We didn't have time to fill in gaps or to get a sense of time passing for them, really. It's just, it seemed like all of these things happened on the same day. And I don't know. There were single stories. Think about War Games from the second Doctor's time. That's 10 episodes long. Each was a half an hour, but that's still, you could call that a five episode season today. Mm-hmm. And that's almost what we have here. One story.
Right.
I agree. I think if we have any hope, you talked about things we want for the upcoming season. If we have any hope, I think we want more episodes. Mm. Because in some ways, the season does feel a bit rushed. It does in some ways to me, especially when you look at the meta of it and knowing that Shooty isn't there for like the filming of the first couple episodes. He's coming in late doing pickup shots. So it does feel a little bit rushed in that sense. So I agree. I want more episodes. It doesn't have to be a lot more, but I think, you know, if we get a little bit more sense of the arc of their adventures over the season, I think we'll be a little.
You know, I think I'm agreeing with you. I think if there was some continuity between episodes to where, you know, literally it's a continuing, can be not related, you know, the stories can be completely separate, but if you have that continuity because I remember back in the old days, they would make reference to what had just happened in that previous episode before going on to the next completely separate adventure.
Yeah.
But I go back to my question at the first of this segment, who is this intended for? And if it's for the 15 to 25 or the 18 to 35 who are used to seeing things in 8-episode blocks, this is normal.
Yeah, especially in Great Britain.
Yes.
Yeah.
So who knows?
Who?
And I'm wondering, like, going back, can the order of the episodes be mixed up and still make sense? Maybe there is a little bit of continuity in each episode, but I'm trying to think hard on that.
I think you could shuffle them. It would be my hunch.
Other than the first one, Space Babies is, you know, clearly a pickup from the Church on Ruby Road. So that one, and then the last two, of course, have to be at the end. You know, but those other five, I think, are interchangeable.
I was trying to figure out a mixtape where we stick Space Babies further down the line in there, but you can't. You can't do that. Okay.
You can't do that, unfortunately.
Oh, wow.
So here's my last question. I'm going to cross the podcast streams, discussing Trek, discussing Who, you know, sister, brother podcast, International Friendship Day, Hall H, I think. You've got Alex Kurtzman and you've got RTD in the same room, on the same panel. Are we going to see a Star Trek and Doctor Who crossover?
No. Even though Shooty's doctor said it expressly that Star Trek is real and that we can go visit those guys.
Never say never.
Well, if you're on the Star Trek side, you know, if you guys don't want them, you know, we'd be an American anyway.
Exactly.
We can bring them over here.
That great American actor. Well,
hey, I would be fine with that because I'd be discussing QT either way. So I'd be perfectly fine with that.
That's a new podcast.
Oh, But you know what? I do have a feeling that we will get a confirmation on what the spinoff is. I think, and if it's, you know, Martha Jones return or what, I think we will be getting confirmation. Yeah. There's going to be some type of confirmation of what. I don't know what, but there's going to be some confirmation. So by the next time we record again, whether it's next week or the week or so after, or a week after that, we will be discussing it. This was a good conversation, by the way, guys. Just a very good conversation.
Oh, I love the way you set it up. It's great. I've got kind of a news thing. If it would tell me when there's when is the right time and place for that?
So. It's absolutely right now.
Okay.
Do you need like any kind of musical introduction?
Yes.
Okay.
Actually, that's actually perfectly appropriate because this is a friend of mine who cosplays as the Second Doctor.
Ooh.
So he will appreciate the little recorder intro there. Brett Herholz, pal of mine. Is an illustrator, and I don't quite know how he's done this. If this is playing fast and loose with licensing, or if he's very careful about things like that. He does not want to infringe on copyright, but he's got a Doctor Who comic book that he's working on now. He's going to have it finished for Long Island Who, which is the next big Who convention coming up. But it features the Scream of the Shalka Doctor, who is now canon. And in confrontation with the vampire and Andy Warhol. Exactly.
What?
I don't know what he's up to. But anyway, it is a legit Doctor Who comic book. And Brett Herholz. Just look for the man on social media. That last name is spelled H-E-R-H-O-L-Z. And anyway, he's a buddy of mine, and he's drawn some... he and I draw Sherlock Holmes cartoons for each other and so on. But anyway, this Doctor Who comic is coming out with the Richard E. Grant Doctor Vampire and Andy Warhol.
And if I'm not mistaken, I think Brett has been on an episode of Discussing Who before. It's been quite a while. But I want to say that he and I also did an episode of Discussing Comics together.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
I remember one time.
Well, I remember that we recorded one or something. I'm not sure if it ever aired, the Discussing Who.
We'll have to see. I can't remember. I'm old now. I can't remember.
Now that we've had however many,
322.
Today. Holy smoke.
Yes. All right. So for everyone listening, thank you guys for staying with us. This has been, again, an awesome discussion. Had a load of fun with this. Thank you both for being here as always. Thanks everyone in the chat. And as always, we will be back next time.
You've been listening to the Discussing Network. Find out more at discussingnetwork.com.